The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. New guidelines were recently released regarding the PPP loan program. What are the changes, and how can you meet the rules to receive full loan forgiveness? Paul Niefer discusses tax planning tips for 2020 and key considerations for those applying for assistance through the CFAP and CCC programs. That's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. Paul Niefer with Clifton Larson Allen is a regular and very popular guest on our podcast. He assists many farmers with accounting and tax planning questions. He's based in Washington State but travels to assist farmers throughout the country. With updates announced for the PPP loan program, I wanted him to share how those changes may impact farmers. Plus, he gave us an update on tax planning items for 2020 and some thoughts on applying for the CFAP and CCC assistance programs for losses to crop and livestock income. Paul Niefer joins me. Paul has been a regular guest here on our Farming the Countryside podcast, always a very popular guest as he talks about lots of things dealing with numbers and taxes and the CARES Act and so forth. Paul, let me begin with this. Before we get into that, what are things like out in the western U.S. up in Washington State?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you because I'm right in the middle of our wheat country, and we're probably looking at, if not record crops, pretty close to record crops, at least on the wheat side. We've had plenty of timely rains in the last couple months. As a matter of fact, it rained a little bit yesterday, and it's been cool weather. So I think the wheat, the legumes, you know, out here, our alternative crop is chickpeas or garbanzos, whatever you want to call them, green peas, dry peas, and some lentils up in the Palouse. So as far as the crops themselves, they're looking pretty good.
That's good. What is the general feeling, would you say, from farmers out there? I suppose it's probably similar across the country, but what do you hear from farmers in your area?
Yeah, I think right now they're when they know you're having a good crop coming in, a lot of them are a little bit optimistic. Now I'm going to tell you there's certain farmers that are definitely in trouble, and prices would have to rally $1 or $2 a bushel on wheat for them to get out of trouble. However, you know, with the PLC payment that likely will show up in October, and, you know, that's probably getting, for some of my farmers out here, that's going to be $70 or $80 or $90 an acre. That'll definitely help out. So it just all depends on what their situation is. I mean, I have some farmers that, year in and year out, they're going to make money no matter what. And then there's others that struggle. And the struggle right now is definitely worse than it was 5 years ago. But I think, you know, if they can get the crop I think they're going to get, that's definitely going to help them out.
Good, good. We may circle back around to some of those type of issues, but I want to jump right off the bat here to something that you've been writing about quite a bit. And certainly it's on our top of our minds, which the PPP loans and some changes in those. Originally, for those that applied, we were looking at an 8-week time period. Now that has changed, and then some of the numbers surrounding it have changed as far as how much I have to spend on and wages and so forth. Why did you start by giving kind of a broad view of the changes, and then we can dive into some specifics?
Yeah, the broad view is that for people that took out their loans before June 5th, instead of an 8-week period to spend that money, they now have a 24-week period. We also think that means instead of being capped at $15,385, which was the maximum amount that you could pay any one person and get a credit for that, it's actually tripled. It's going to be about $46,000 and change. I think it's $46,154 or something like that. So that's probably good news. Now, part of that, we're going to need verification from the SBA to make sure. The other benefit was, instead of having to spend at least 75% on payroll costs, which would be your wages to your employees, plus the health insurance, plus the retirement plan payments you make for the employees, if any, plus the state unemployment tax, now you're only required to spend 60% instead of 75%. Now, our concern when the law was first passed last week, when you read the law, it stated you got no forgiveness unless you spend at least 60%. The SBA came out on Monday and said, no, don't worry about that. If you spend less than 60%, you're still going to get partial forgiveness. You won't get full forgiveness. But with the fact that a farmer now has 24 weeks to pay payroll, they're probably going to be, that should really not be too big of an issue for most farmers out there.
Certainly that 8 weeks was pretty tight. And I know people were having to look about, okay, can I get those wages in that period? For those then that took out the loan before that, do they have to wait the 24 weeks? Maybe some of them were already kind of geared up and ready to roll. Can they go ahead and submit the paperwork for forgiveness sooner than 24 weeks now? Or how does that work?
I know people, well, I'm going to tell you, yes, they can use the 8 week period. So if they have full forgiveness and they want to use the 8 week period, that's fine. However, the form is going to have to be updated that you're going to use. That update, I'm guessing, is going to take the SBA probably 2 or 3 weeks in order to do the update. And there is no incentive to get this form in early. You're not really gaining anything by putting the form in early, at least in our opinion. But if you reach the point where you know you have 100% forgiveness and it occurred during that 8 week period, then I would certainly go ahead and do it.
Do you know yet, or do we know yet, what you'll have to submit in order to prove that, okay, I've spent this amount on wages and I spent it on these folks and I did turn in the appropriate payroll taxes and then I spent this other percentage on the utilities I think you can do and so forth. How do I prove that? What do I need to be thinking about?
Well, we have a form, but it's going to be updated because now it's obsolete with the new changes from last week. So the answer is yes and no. We know what the form looks like, but we don't know all the instructions. For those farmers out there that got a loan based on employees, not on their earnings, but based on employees, it's pretty straightforward. For every payroll that you create during that 8 week period or 24 week period, you need to make a backup of that payroll. And a lot of farmers use, let's say, QuickBooks or CenterPoint or FBS or whatever it might be. Every time they do a payroll, they need to go ahead and make a printout of that payroll. And what they want that payroll to show is the name of the employee, the amount that the employee was paid on a gross basis, the number of hours, and then the rate per hour. Now, if it's a salary, that, you know, you can just list it as salary, because all of that information is going to be needed to calculate whether you have a reduction in forgiveness based on either the fact that your full-time equivalence went down during that 8 week or 24 week period, or you had some type of reduction, you were paying XYZ employee in the first quarter of 2020, you're paying them $20 an hour, now you're paying them $10 an hour, that can have a reduction in the amount of forgiveness. So the form goes through all those calculations, but it's very important that for every one of those payrolls that you issue during that 8 week or 24 week period, the cover period, that you make a backup and have that, because that's going to have to be turned into the bank. Now, on the mortgage interest, the rents, and the utilities, every time you write a check, I would make a photocopy of that check or wait for the check to clear your bank and then grab a copy of that. Usually online, you can grab those copies of that check, plus the invoice, and then I would just stick that in a folder, and then you'll go ahead and accumulate those costs and then put that on the form. So there's a separate line on the form for payroll costs with backups. It's called Schedule A, and then a worksheet for Schedule A. And then there's line two, if my memory's right, line two is interest, line three is rents, and then line four is utilities, and you add that all up. Now, that's when you're dealing with farmers that have employees. We're not talking about the self-employed farmer, which, you know, we'll jump into here in a minute.
And actually, that's where I wanted to go. Talk for a moment about the self-employed farmer, about considerations with that.
Well, I think the key is we have to understand that SBA doesn't understand farming. and they don't understand self-employed people very well. The law or their interim final rule that they issued about 2 months ago, as it's currently written, that's the problem, it probably needs to be updated, but as it's currently written, it appears a self-employed farmer that strictly got a loan based on their net income on Schedule F. So let's say the net income on Schedule F, just as an example, was $50,000. When we go through the math, that's let's make it easier, $60,000. When we go through the math, they qualify for a loan of $12,500. You take 60,000 divided by 12, that's 5,000, then times it by 250%, that's 12,500. The way the interim final rule said that if you didn't have employees and you're strictly a self-employed taxpayer, and they were referencing a Schedule C, we know farmers are Schedule F, but if you're a self-employed person, you're only going to get forgiveness based on your 2019 Schedule F for 8 weeks. So in that case, you're going to have about 20%, 25% of that 12,500 that's not going to be forgiven. Now, we think that when the SBA issued that interim final rule, they were really talking about the Uber driver. You know, it's the person that gets paid, you know, to drive an Uber or drive a car for Uber. That sort of made sense that they might not get forgiveness there, just to make it easy on that Uber driver to calculate the number. However, right now, that's still what the interim final rule is saying. So we really need guidance to come out and say, hey, instead of being 8 weeks of your 2019 Schedule F, it's now going to be 24 weeks. And that's what it should be, because that's how the law didn't say that you're still stuck with 8 weeks of payroll. You now get 24 weeks of payroll. So the Schedule F farmer that applied based on their Schedule F income, they really should get credit for up to 24 weeks of Schedule F income off of the 2019 return. Now, the issue also is, according to the instructions, the farmer actually has to pay themselves. And so what we've been telling our farmer clients or our self-employed clients, go ahead and actually write a check to yourself. Now, you may turn around and put it back into the farm account. That's fine. But according to the instructions, they actually need to see that you were paid that amount, whatever it might be.
And when I pay myself, then I'm going to take out all my payroll taxes as well at that time?
No. You're a schedule. That's why SBA doesn't understand, or the people that wrote the laws don't understand self-employed people. Self-employed people don't pay themselves a payroll. They just write a draw check, or they're reinvested in the company. So there's no tax consequences to writing this check. You're just simply doing a draw to yourself. And then if you put it back in the business, it's a capital contribution. It has absolutely no tax effect at all.
All right, good. You know, this plan has come together very quickly, of course. So it's, yeah. I guess it's understandable that this thing's going to continue to evolve. Do you see that we're going to continue to have updates to this, aren't we? I mean, we've already jumped from 8 to 24. What do you see as far as adjustments coming down the road that you would predict?
You know, there's because right now the law says that the loan forgiveness is non-taxable, but the IRS came out and said under Section 250 that you know, it's going to be your payments, your expenses are then going to be non-deductible. So essentially, it's a non-tax event on the income, but it's non-deductible on the expenses, so they net to zero. So there's no benefit to the farmer, to the taxpayer. We continue to, when we thought that when they did the Flexibility Act last week, the PPP Flexibility Act last week, that they were going to update it to say, hey, the expenses are now deductible. They did not do that. There are members of Congress, especially in the Senate, that are saying, well, we wanted the farmer to double dip, but they haven't passed the law yet. So that one, there's a good chance of that happening. We've heard some chatter. I don't think it's going to happen, but we've certainly heard some chatter that says, look, this money was supposed to be for people that were going to suffer economic harm. You know, their revenues were going to go down. They were going to be, you know, weren't able to work. Most of the farmers are not in that position, but that isn't how the law was originally written. We hear some chatter coming out and saying, look, in order for you to get forgiveness, your revenues are going to have to go down by a certain amount during, let's say, the second quarter of 2020 or the third quarter of 2020. Now, for farmers, maybe a lot of farmers don't even have any revenue during that period as compared to the 2019. Again, that's chatter. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Congress is finding out that the American public is getting fed up with all the changes on this PPP program. So I think they're going to leave that well enough alone.
In the end, because there's so many of these loans, how will they ever be able to go through all of this and do the verification? Getting the money out was one thing. Now we got to verify it going back the other way. What's going to be the backlog on that side?
Yeah, and also I think we've also heard some chatter that Congress may come out and say, hey, if your loan was less than, let's say, $150,000 or $200,000, you automatically get 100% forgiveness. We don't need the paperwork. We've heard chatter because that would eliminate millions and millions of loans, because a lot of those, if you add up the dollar amount, it's less than probably 10% of the overall dollar amount, but it's probably 60% of the loans or 80% of the loans were if you're under that dollar amount. So that might happen. The SBA has come out and said if your loan's over $2 million, we're automatically going to do review. Well, that's maybe 100,000 loans, something like that. I can't remember the number. Maybe it's not that high, but that's a lot of loans. They're not staffed to even handle this right now. So how are they going to be able to review all of that? We really don't know.
No, and I've heard some of those things as well. If I'm a farmer and have any contract employees, so I wasn't taking payroll, but I had a contract with them, those are not eligible right now. Is that correct?
Correct. In order to get a loan, it had to be an employee. So if you weren't running them through payroll, you did not get a loan. Now, the original CARES Act in the Section 1102, when you went through the definition, they said that independent contractors that you pay qualified, but the SBA came out very, very quickly and said, no, what that really meant is the independent contractor could get their own PPP loan, not the farmer that was paying the independent contractor, because they didn't want to have what they called a double dip in that situation.
You've alluded to some of this, but if I'm going through this program as a farmer right now, are there other tax considerations I need to be thinking as I move toward the end of the year, how it may impact things as I'm going to look down the road another 6 months here?
Well, the one thing I forgot to mention that I'll bring up now is that the Flexibility Act last week actually allows farmers to defer the payment of the 6.2% FICA tax on employees, their employer portion, not the employee portion, but the employer portion. So if you pay, let's say you have a farmer that pays $200,000 of wages to their employees during the year, that's about $13,000, not quite, but $12,400 of FICA tax that they're allowed to not pay any of it this year and pay half of it on December 31 of 2021 and the other half on December 31 of 2022. There's no interest associated with it. So that's something that farmers really should be starting to take a look at. Maybe we need to go ahead and reduce the amount of money that we send in with our, either deposit at the bank or send in via, most everything now is EFTPS, so electronic funds. So that's something that they should definitely take a look at. Also, if farmers had a loss in 2018 or 2019, they should be talking a net loss. They need to be talking to their tax preparer, and probably their tax preparer has already talked to them. Under the old law or the new law that was passed a couple of years ago that's now sort of no longer in existence for 18, 19, and 20 tax returns, instead of carrying that loss back 2 years, you actually get to carry it back 5 years. Actually, you're required to carry it back 5 years. You can't even carry it back 2 years. And if you had too big of a loss, there was a limit on that called the excess business loss. Well, now that's disappeared for 18, 19, and 20. So they can even carry back more to 2013, 2014, 2015, et cetera. So those are probably some of the key things. There's also some, not going to apply to many farmers. It might. There's what's called a refundable payroll tax credit. Farmers don't automatically qualify for it, but if their revenues during the second quarter of 2020 compared to the second quarter of 2019 are down enough, they're 40% of the year before or the third quarter, they can actually get a refund, a refundable. It's where the Uncle Sam goes ahead and makes a payment to the farmer, but that's only if they didn't participate in the PPP program. So if they didn't get a PPP loan, they qualify for this refundable payroll tax credit. And we're going to have some farmers that didn't get a PPP loan. They weren't interested in it, and they may or may not be able to take advantage of the refundable payroll tax credit. Those are some of the big things or the key things that I can think of from a tax standpoint.
All right, good, good. Of course, a lot of farmers right now are into their FSA office, and we've got money coming through CFAP and CCC as far as making up for some of the losses I would have had with crops and livestock. What should I be thinking about? Maybe I've already signed up or I'm heading to do that. You've written quite a bit about that, of course, right now on your blog on the internet too.
Yeah, I think what's happening is I think especially livestock producers who historically in the past haven't worried about payment limits are getting bit right now by the payment limits. If you're structured as a partnership, let's say you got four partners and they farm together and you're structured as a partnership, you're going to qualify for $1 million of payments on livestock or grain or whatever it might be. But if you're simply structured as an LLC or a corporation, but what we see a lot is an LLC, you're limited to one payment. Now, if all four of you are actively involved in the farm, yes, CFAP came out and said you're going to qualify for three payments. But a lot of people, especially in the livestock industry, because they've never really participated in the farm programs, weren't really well aware of the fact that payment limits can come back and bite them, especially if they're structured as an LLC or a corporation. So we're probably helping a lot of our farmers or talking to other farmers out there. Matter of fact, I had a phone call yesterday, about a 45-minute phone call on going through, you know, how they can restructure their farm operation in order to qualify for a payment. I think that's the key thing. The other thing, I think a lot of the livestock producers had a nasty surprise when they found out that they don't really get a payment if their inventory or if their sales were covered by some type of a contract that locked in the price. They're not getting a payment. It's almost the way to look at it is if you were lousy at marketing and didn't lock in prices and so on, you're actually being rewarded for being lousy at marketing. Now that's an overstatement. I'll probably get in trouble from some of the listeners for saying that, but I've heard that mentioned many, many times. So that's something that probably, you know, they were expecting a large size payment. And then FSA, local FSA office says, look, I know that you have a bunch of your hogs or your cattle was either forward contracted or you had a price contract or whatever it might be, you're not going to qualify for any payment. So that's been a nasty surprise. Now, the milk producers probably had a good lobby or something. I'm not sure. Maybe it's because Wisconsin is a battleground this year for the president. They could have their milk contracted. They could be signed up for the dairy margin program. They could be hedging. They could have everything hedged and so on and so forth, and they still qualify for full payments.
Interesting. Well, you know, under these programs, and you know, the interview that we did just before this was with a pork producer, and we talked about, hey, the money coming through CFAP and CCC, that amount, is it enough to keep folks going? In a lot of cases, there's a lot of people awfully worried about that, to say the least. What do you hear? Is there going to be a version 2.0? Is there something else coming down the road, or what do you hear?
Yeah, I'm hearing that, you know, well, we know there's more money coming in July, you know, to fund CCC. We hear chatter that the next round of you know, COVID relief likely will boost, you know, CCC. Now, you're starting to hear, okay, the economy seems to be turning around. Now, I'm not talking the farm economy. I'm talking the economy overall. Is Congress especially the Senate, are they really that eager to go into debt another $500 billion or a trillion? I just don't know. Ethanol, yeah, the ethanol peak was probably a few years back, you have to look at it. Tesla is now worth, $200 billion, and you add up all the value of General Motors, Ford, and a Fiat Chrysler, and it's about half that number. So, the days of ethanol saving the corn grower, I just don't know if that's there.
Hey, Paul, before we wind up, we've been on this broadcast before, and we've talked about ARC and PLC, and I think a lot of folks probably lean towards the ARC because that looked like that was going to be the best thing, and people have already signed up now, so that's done. But the way that the prices went down, is PLC going to be the bigger payoff in some of these commodities than we thought?
Yeah. Well, I think it's almost the opposite. Under the 14 Farm Bill, when they signed up, the majority of them signed up for ARC. I think the statistics, Andrew, is that for corn, most of them signed up for PLC. I know wheat growers, probably 90% of the wheat growers signed up for PLC. They're looking at a 90-cent per bushel payment. Corn, I think for 2019, if prices stay really low, maybe you're looking at a dime payment per bushel, maybe 20 cents. It's not going to be as big as everybody thinks it might be. ARC would likely probably make a bigger payment, assuming yields are down. If yields are trend line or better, then ARC won't make a payment. PLC won't make a payment for corn and soybeans, at least based on current trends right now. Now, PLC could make a small payment on corn. Now, on the 2020 crop, might be a little bit different. But remember, the MYA period begins September 1 of 2019 and goes through August 31st. We've already sold probably 60 or 70% of the corn crop. So the sales between now and August 31st really are not going to change that MYA price much, and the MYA price is still estimated by at least Kansas State University to still be over 370, which is the reference price. So if I was a farmer, corn and soybean farmer, don't be counting on a large payment this October. Maybe next October for the 2020 crop, you might get something.
Okay. Before we wind up, any other things that we should be thinking about top of mind? We've got covered a lot of ground, but sometimes things slip past us, especially these days.
No, I think the key is don't get in a hurry to file for forgiveness on the PPP loan unless you know you automatically got 100%, especially if you're a self-employed farmer that got a loan based on your earnings. Hold off. There should be more guidance. Hopefully there's more guidance coming out that's going to indicate that you should get full forgiveness. I'm not guaranteeing that, but I think you'll probably get full forgiveness if you wait the 24 weeks versus doing it based on the 8-week period.
Paul, I always appreciate the time, and I know the listeners do as well.
No problem. I enjoy having the conversation. I just wish sometimes it was about better subjects.
Well, true. We'll let you suggest the better subject next time. It'll be your choice. How about that?
Well, actually, this is what I live and breathe. So maybe this is the correct subject, so to speak.
Well, nonetheless, we appreciate it.
Good. Thank you.
As we mentioned, the PPP program continues to change. So keep listening for more updates as the rules evolve. Paul mentioned some items he expects to yet be updated. So we'll have to see if and when those occur. I hope all is well on your farm or wherever you may live. We finally got the last of our soybeans in the ground on June 9th, so we'll hope for good weather for the crops and good grass for the cattle. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.